Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burge and this is a show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review and stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to download and listen to, hopefully enjoy. So, today's book that I'm going to be reviewing is the second book in a series. Now, what I normally do is I check out lots of first books in series. I don't very often read the first book and then immediately read the second book and then read the third book or continue in that way. Sometimes I'll do that, but generally I'll try one out and then leave it for quite a while and, you know, try out lots of other first books in series, because a lot of these fantasy series, they last a really long time and some of them haven't been completed yet. So I don't mind checking out the first book and seeing if I want to continue. So if I actually look through all of the list of all of the episodes that I've recorded so far, there's probably lots of first books in the series and a lot fewer second books in the series. But when I was away on a holiday, on vacation over the summer in France, me and Juliana were traveling around and I finished a book and then I finished an audiobook and I finished an ebook. And I thought, oh, what else do I want to do? I start a new audiobook. And I checked through and I realized that I decided, of course, before I went, I was like, oh, let's buy some more audiobooks. Then I realized that all of the audiobooks that I had left were second books in a series. I had the Red Sea Under Red Skies, which is the follow-up to The Lies of Loch Lomara by Scott Lynch. And I had The Fire in the Sun, which is a follow-up to the When Gravity Fails book by George A. Effinger. And I had the book that I'm going to be reviewing today, Before They Are Hanged, which is the follow-up to The Blade Itself by Joe Abercrombie in the First Law series. And of course, I did this because I wanted to catch up on some of these series. These are the ones that kind of appealed to me that I wanted to get on with and continue with the series, at least into the second book. So, and the reason I picked Before They Are Hanged is because I really remembered really enjoying the first book in the series. And it's actually quite a good job that I didn't look back and check how many stars I gave the first book, The Blade Itself, because after I finished, or when I was almost finished this book, I checked and thought, well, what did I give that first book? What did I give The Blade Itself? And it turns out 2 stars. And I was like, why is it 2 stars? Well, actually, by then I knew why I'd given it 2 stars. But before I started listening to this audiobook, Before They Are Hanged, I'd forgotten how much I was frustrated and annoyed by the first book in the series. In the first book, I just remember, like, characters were just waiting around and there was important stuff. I knew there was important stuff happening in the background, but I didn't know what the important stuff was, you know. And there was this guy turns up, Logan, who seemed to be really important in the first half of the book, and then he turns up into the city, and I thought, now this Logan, he's like this barbarian, he's going to come south and he's going to become the champion of this other country and he's going to go back to the north and he's going to... But he turns up halfway through the book into the city and then does nothing for the rest of the book. He just doesn't do anything. He just stands around and watches other people do stuff. And there's another character who spends a lot of time in this fencing tournament, and there's, you know, other people trying to help him, and he's training and all this kind of stuff going backwards and forwards, getting... And I was like, wow, this fencing tournament must be really important. It's going to lead up to something and the prize is going to be really meaningful. And then it just happened, loads of time spending on this. And then it just kind of happens and then they move on. And I was like, well, I know that must have been important. Surely it must have been important, but I never found out anything that was important. And when we got all the way through to the end of the book, all these characters come together and then they say, and now you're going to set off on this quest. And these characters get together and they go, right, and now we're going on a quest. And unfortunately, I didn't know, you know, what the quest was going to be. You know, they had to do something, there's some magical thing, but why were they going on there? I don't know. There was Gandalf who was going with them. Gandalf knew, I mean, he's called Byers in this book, but he was like, he knows where they're going, but we were never told the reason. And I realized that I'd got to the end of the first book in the series, and I still didn't, even by the end of the first book in the series, I didn't know what the book was about or where the story was going. Lots of stuff was happening. And I could see that in the next book, it'll prove to be quite important. But it was frustrating to get to the end of the book and not know what was going to happen in it, or not know why stuff was happening, and unclear why one of the characters is a major viewpoint character because he didn't do anything in the book. And then another character, well, why is this a major character because he didn't do anything, and all these disconnected things. So keeping that in mind going into this book, let's see if it improves at all. Now, What does improve in this book is that the world is fleshed out a bit more, because in the first book they're up in the north and then they go south, and yeah, sure, stuff happens on the way down, but we don't really like the whole kind of political setup among the different nations, among the different empires, the kingdoms, isn't really explained. There's some Northmen in the north and they've kind of united under a new king, and there's a battle coming up and lots of people are preparing for the battle in the first book. It seems that in this book, there's a lot more of that kind of backstory is explained. At the end of the first book, it's like, yes, we're going to go north and we're going to fight this battle. And I can say, I was just thinking, well, this is going to end in disaster. And I was kind of proved right. There are some disastrous battles, but at least stuff is happening. At least people are going somewhere and the battles are actually happening now. Battles which are important, which feel important. Like at the end of the first book, there was a battle that happened. I can't even remember what it was, but I can just remember at the time thinking, well, this battle seems like it's just been inserted here just to make some action happen at the end of the book. Otherwise, nothing would have happened. And even now, I don't remember who that fight was between or among or anything like that. Anyway, so what I did like about this is that some of that kind of world politics and what's going on down in the Dagoska, which is in the south, you've got the Northmen and the Southmen, and there's other stuff going over in the west, and then there's zombies coming from the south, and all that kind of stuff, that the main threats are finally revealed for what they are. Like, why should we be caring about what's happening in the north in the first book? Finally, we understand the threat from the north. And why are we caring about this stuff happening in the south, these rumors of stuff from the south? We do actually get a bit of that on why we should be afraid for our main characters, or at least for this kind of middle kingdom of white European analog kind of people in the middle. And why Baez, who is the main wizard, why he is trying to save these people, and why he's going, you know, we discover the threat that is to the north and to the south, and why people went west. Well, we don't even understand why they went west yet, but like stuff that kind of stuff is filled in. Another really good point of this book, which I actually enjoyed, is that we're filled in a lot of the backstory. It's like, okay, who is Baez? This main wizard guy, and why is he going in this direction, and what are they looking for, and why is there, you know, all that kind of backstory that you need, that was filled in this book. And now I'm like, oh, that's why they did this in the first book, oh, that's why that happened in the first. But the thing is, all of that kind of interesting backstory, kind of talking about the mythology, well, not the mythology, like the legends, the actual history, because Baez was there for a lot of it, because he's a long, 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 long lived wizard, and he's like, yeah, I was around then, and the fall, this empire fell, and this other thing, and these other people, these other wizards came, and then there was these makers, and then there was these kings, and then there was these gods, and he's explaining what happened in the background. And I was like, this is really interesting, and this is really important, because it lays up the entire history of the world as it is at the moment, or as it is in the book itself. But it's frustrating, because all of that, all of Baez kind of sitting around telling the people he's on a quest with, he's like, oh, and then this happens, oh, you should listen to this. It's like, they have to kind of coax the story out of him. Like, his apprentice is like, well, Kwai, his apprentice is like, well, tell me why I should do this, or tell me what this is important about, why that bit is important, and what about this, and what about that. Like, they have to keep asking him questions. Well, tell us this, why is this important, why is that? And he does, and it takes about 40 minutes in total of this, you know, of this audiobook that I listened to, because I listened to it as an audiobook, of course. It only took about 40 minutes. I was like, couldn't they have asked him that, like, halfway through the previous book? And then I'd have understood why they go on a quest at the other one, what they're going on the quest for, what are they looking for, why, you know, all of that kind of stuff. You know, it kind of matters. Like, I think I mentioned this in the previous podcast about this series, is that, like, one thing that makes the Lord of the Rings interesting is that halfway through the first book, they kind of get together and go, what do we need to do? This is what we need to do. Why do we need to do it? Because of this, this, and this. And they say, well, let's do this. No, let's do this. No, let's do this. And then they all make a decision. No, let's go here and do this. And these are the reasons why we're doing it. Even though it isn't completely clear all of the reasons or all of the motivations and everything that happens, at least we know what we're working towards. And Joe Abercrombie, he has all of this set up. He could tell us all. Like, one of the main characters in the book knows the full backstory, and it is revealed in here. But it's, like, again, it's really frustrating that we get, like, halfway through the second book, it's been a year since I read the first book, and all this time I've been like, why are they doing this? Where are they going? What's going on? Why is this all important? And we do get a little bit about that backstory for what they're looking for, or, you know, this magical MacGuffin that they're searching for as well. So that's good stuff. Otherwise, the world is just the same, you know, something, something swords and something, you know, Europeans and Arabs in the south and, you know, barbarians in the north, blah, blah, blah. And they are traveling across, or some of the characters are traveling across a continent, which is kind of like the ancient, like, forebearer civilizations are there. And they see these big palaces and the big bridges and big rivers, and everything is big and everything is huge. And they're like, ooh, things used to be bigger and better in the old days. There's a lot of that kind of stuff going on, which, to be honest, we've seen a lot of times before in other fantasy. And to be honest, nothing in this book is actually, like, new in a way which is really surprising. Nothing ever happens where I go, oh, I've never seen that in a fantasy book, except for something which I'll mention later. So, moving on to the characters. What I remember really enjoying about the first book is that there were a few characters which were interesting. Interesting characters, and also enjoyable characters to spend time with. For example, there was one character who is the his name is Sandan Glockta, and he was once a young hero who had ride into battle, and he was a champion swordsman, and then he was tortured by the enemies in the south, and then he came back and he became a torturer himself. He was an inquisitor. He works for the Inquisition and tortures a lot of people. And he was one of my favorite characters in the first book, and he really does grow. He in the first book he was just like, oh yeah, I'm this clever character and I do this clever stuff and I'm good, and I'm, you know, he has to use his brains to get through different things and talks his way through, and he always had lots of asides. You know, he would say something out loud and then mutter something under his breath, but only to himself, and it became a little bit repetitive in that way, but it was always fun. Like, he always had these, like, fun little asides to himself in his own head, and the audiobook narrator is very good at that. You know, it really brings it to life. The other thing that I really enjoyed about his helpers. He has his practicals. There was Practical Frost and Practical Severard. In the first book, I really enjoyed spending time with them because Frost is this albino guy who has had his tongue cut out. So, and Severard is all like, and, you know, they had some really fun characters. And I really loved that they would always just get stuff done. If they had an order, they would carry out the order exactly perfectly to the letter. They're kind of extensions of Glockta himself rather than agents in their own right, even though they do have their own minds and have their own opinions about different things and do stuff. It's like this disabled guy who, you know, doesn't have any teeth anymore and can't walk properly and is in constant pain. His helpers, Severard and Frost, are very interesting, like extensions of his will. And it's good, like I say, to see the sidekick characters always doing the right thing, even if it's quite terrible, because they're torturers. That's what they do. But they always tortured in the right way. And in this book, he actually gets a new character, Practical Vitari, who is a female practical, and she's there kind of to keep an eye on Glockta when he goes down into the south. He goes into Digoska in the south. He has to save a city, and Vitari and Severard and Frost are with him as he's kind of maneuvering politically and trying to build up the defenses and get all that kind of stuff done. And she is interesting because she isn't like the other two practicals, always following his orders to the letter. Or is she? Never quite sure, because you're not quite sure where her loyalties lie, if she's looking out for Glockta or working against him or just reporting on him and stuff like that. So those are some really fun characters there in the north, fighting the Northmen. There's lots of battles going on up there, or lots of preparations for battles in the north. And you've got the Dogman and Three Trees and Black Dow. These are the named fighters of the north, and these guys have been fighting in the north with the new king. I can't remember the guy's name. Anyway, there's a new king up in the north, and they used to fight with him, and now they're fighting against him. So they join up with the Union troops, when the Unions are like the white European people in the middle, and they join up with them and work with a character from the first novel called Colum West. And I don't want to, you know, give too much away, but all of these characters are really a lot of fun. The Dogman and West, especially, they go on interesting journeys as they have to, you know, work with the prince, who is in the north as well, and so kind of like use their influence in some ways and use their power, and you know, they get more power and less power as they go through the book. And I really enjoy spending time with these characters. They're some of the more interesting characters in the book, because I think they're interesting characters because they're doing interesting stuff, and we understand what they're doing, the journey that they go on as characters, and the jobs that they have to do. Kind of feel important. Like there's an army there, and they have to defend against the army. In the same way that Glockta, I kind of enjoyed spending time with him, even though I think there's problems with his storyline in this book. Because you get halfway through and you're like, wow, this isn't going to work out for him. And again, I don't want to give it away if it does work out for him or not work out for him, but the way it goes through, it's like a little bit obvious in some ways and a little bit... I wouldn't say, again, it's difficult for me to explain, but like I got all the way through and then something happens and he goes somewhere else and you're just like, well, all of that stuff that was happening there, it was fun to read about him trying to defend the city in the south, just in the same way that it's fun to read about the guys battling in the north. But overall, there was only like one or two things that Colin West and the Dogmen did which progressed the overall story. In the wider world, like say their own personal journeys was really interesting, just like Sandan Glockta in the south, his own personal journey and what he was up to was interesting. But by the time I got to the end of these two kind of threads, these like in the north thread and in the south thread, I kind of got to the end and I'm just like, well that doesn't really help progress the story. Again, maybe 40 minutes worth of story has progressed overall in that way. So, yeah, stuff in the north, stuff in the south, and then heading west. I think it's west. I'm guessing it's west. Can't remember exactly. You've got these three different viewpoint characters. There's maybe six or seven viewpoint characters in total. There's Glockta, and then Colin West, and the Dogman. And then heading west, there's actually three of them in the same party. There's Logan Ninefingers, who's our barbarian from the north, who can speak to demons. No, he can speak to spirits, or he hears what spirits say. And he's going to be helpful at the end because they've got to get something from a spirit. And then there's Pharaoh, who is the barbarian woman from the first book, who I can't remember her doing anything in the first book, but she does have a job in this book. And she has to. She has some demon blood in her, we find out in this book. And she's going to be doing something important because she can touch this magical MacGuffin that Logan can ask for, and she can touch it. And Byers is along. He's not a viewpoint character. Byers is our Gandalf figure who's going along on this journey with her. And our other viewpoint figure is Giselle Dan Luthar. And Giselle is the spoiled brat who was doing the sword fighting tournament in the first book. And I was like, right, now we're going to discover why he is going to be important. He's going on this journey, and by the end of this journey, we're going to find out what he's going to be there for. And unfortunately, we don't find out why he is important. Like the other characters, he goes on a journey. I certainly feel a lot more sympathetic to him because he was very spoiled. He was a spoiled brat in the first book, and he was, you know, complaining about his money and his looks and his you know, position in life and all that kind of stuff. And throughout this, he does get beaten up quite badly by the weather and within battles and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, he goes on an interesting journey as a character, just as all of these characters do interesting stuff, and they all go on an interesting journey, and they you know, their relationships develop among each other, and the views of life, you know, they all go on a really interesting character journey. Unfortunately, like 5/6 of the way through this book, so we're almost completed, almost finished with the second book in a 3-book series, and Giselle has this conversation with himself saying, I'm on a journey, I don't yet understand. Or it says, he is on a journey, he didn't yet understand. And I'm like, me too, I'm on a journey, I don't understand. Why is Giselle on this journey? I kind of work out what's going on. There's this magical MacGuffin, we've got to get that. And I know what these characters over here are doing and why these other characters are needed. But why is Giselle along with us on this journey? Still don't know. And then in the same chapter, he goes, well, why are we all the way out here? He actually asked that, why are we all the way out here? And I'm like, why have you waited 2 novels to ask why you're on the journey? Why have you waited 2 novels to ask why you're all the way out there? Because if a character is standing next to somebody who knows and hasn't yet asked why, like me as the reader, myself as a reader, I also want to know why. And that's what's really frustrating. The other frustrating thing about this, in this in this book. Like I say, there's some guys on the quest on to the west. Other people are saving a city in the south. There's other people fighting in the north. And at the end of all these stories, there's one thing which affects. Like, there's one thing that happens in the north which affects the story that happens in the south. Just one. But then the quest lasts the entire book, and by the end of it, not only has it not affected anything that's happened in the north or the south, but when it gets to the end, again, I don't want to give too much of spoilers, but it literally could have affected anything that happens in the north or the south or back home in the Union. And I'm just thinking, well, why did we read all the way through? And I understand what, you know, Joe Abercrombie is going for with this story, that he's going, I'll do a quest. Like in the first book, it's like, well, I'll tell a fantasy story and there's not going to be a quest. And then by the end, it's like, oh no, there is going to be a quest, but that's in the next book. And then you read this quest, and it's like, yes, and they traveled all the way across a whole continent. It took a whole book for them to get these four characters or six characters, but you know, all these, like these four or five main characters. And they've got all the way across they've spent the whole book getting all the way across this massive big continent. And they've seen lots of big stuff and they've had fights along the way and they've been on this big journey. And when they get to the end of it, what happens? Well, literally nothing happens. We have to wait until the next book. Now, I wouldn't have minded that. Like, okay, they're still on their way. You know, it's the middle book in a trilogy. You're going to have these kind of people just getting from one place to the next. So, you know, it's exactly like that in Lord of the Rings. It's like that in many books. They're just getting from one place to the other place. But it's a bit frustrating when it's kind of like, it's kind of set up that, oh yes, and we'll get there by the end of this book. And then at the end of the book, and it's like Joe Abercrombie's going, ha ha, gotta read the next book. Oh, even not, he's not even saying that. He's like, ha ha, it all failed. Even though, you know, it didn't all fail in that way. But I'm just saying that, like, the what we thought would be going on when they got to the end of this story doesn't, you know, it doesn't get there. And again, that's what makes this book so frustrating to read. I know that there's important stuff. There's a character who knows all of the answers. He's just not telling us. And I don't understand why. Like, we get to there, you know, almost all of the way through the second book, and one of the main characters is going, oh, I don't know what I'm doing here. What am I doing here? And me, like I say, I'm a reader doing the same thing. I think I'm being a bit redundant there. However, there is a hint at the end of this book which does make me understand why Giselle might be important, and it's a mild spoiler, but like there's an important position comes up, and they're saying, well, we need to do this, and we're going to do this, and we're going to get everyone together, and they're going to vote for who fills this position. And they said, well, if at the last minute, you know, this is Glockta or people having a conversation back in the Union, they're going, well, it's going to be important that we find the right person. Well, who's it going to be? Well, what happens if this person? Well, all the things are getting together. And so, like, well, maybe if late in the day, after all the deliberation in a few months' time, or however long it's going to take, when everyone gets together, if somebody arrives and it's somebody without enemies and a compromise candidate who everyone can agree on, maybe they'll be the thing. And I'm like, that's Giselle! Giselle, that's what he's doing. It's like right in the very last chapter of the book. I'm like, Giselle is going to be the compromise candidate. He's going to come back. Or maybe not Giselle, but another one of these characters. But it can really only be Giselle because he's the only one who is, by birthright and qualifications, could be the right guy to fill this job. And I'm just like, well, that's probably it. Everyone knows him because he was a hero in the first book because he won the tournament and all that kind of good stuff. He's going to come back and you know, be the compromise candidate, the guy without enemies, someone everyone can agree on. He's going to have all of the qualifications and the birthright and all that kind of stuff. And I'm just like, oh, do I have to read the next book in the series? Which I probably will do, because, like I say, even all of the frustrations in the story, I actually really enjoyed this book a lot more than the first. It's still got, like, major problems, but the characters are all doing stuff in interesting ways and doing fun stuff in interesting ways. A lot more fun. In the first book, it's sort of like, well, we're in the city. Let's hang out in this city. How long are we going to hang out? Well, until the end of the book. Well, I guess I've got to fill the end of the book with stuff happening in the city. Here, nothing happens in that city. Everyone is out doing interesting stuff. Saving the day, saving the city, fighting in a battle, doing this, doing that, getting the prince, you know, to safety. All of these really cool things. And the things that they do along the way is interesting. So, yeah, it's a pity that I still don't know why some characters are going along and what is actually, what is important. It's like the same as in the first book, right at the end, it's like, and now, for the next book, we're going to do this. And then I was like, oh, great, so now I'll read the next book. And then all of that next book is kind of just killing time. And now, in the next book, we're going to do this. And I'm like, oh, great, now I'm going to read it. So, yeah. Yeah, characters, really, really good. Story, really, really frustrating. intentionally, though. That's the worst thing, is that Joe Abercrombie obviously knows what he's doing, and it appeals to some people. I guess I've just got to like listen to the next book in this series in sooner rather than later, because I think another reason why I enjoy this book more is because I understood what I was getting into. I kind of knew that the story was going to be confusing and frustrating, and because I was prepared for it, I kind of enjoyed this book a lot more because of that. And I just think it's better, the characters are better written as well. The characters are more interesting, they're more fleshed out. And there's some female characters as well. Even though they're slightly one-dimensional, they are actually doing stuff. It's difficult to have, I know it's a weird thing to say, but like I mentioned this before in my review of the Prince of Nothing series, which is a book about, you know, an almost painfully misogynistic society and how women have to fight their way up. This is less painfully misogynistic, but it still doesn't leave a lot of room for females to get by in the world, even though the females that are in the book are, yes, a bit single-toned. They all have some very... They all have similar kind of things in common, which I would have seen, like to see a bit more range in the female characters. Anyway, bringing it round to the writing. Overall, I think the writing is very well done. I quite like the way that characters think, and you know, the way that the characters are written, like inside their own head, what they say out loud to what they're thinking. Certainly, with Glockter is better done in this book, is better written in this book than it is in the previous one. I did make a few notes though. For example, there's a bad dream showing how much of a threat. Or how much a threat is scaring a protagonist, which always makes me go, and there's another chapter I wrote down, a bit too clever in chapter 13. I think it was because, like, at this important section, suddenly the cracks started, well, not the cracks started showing, but the designs started showing. It's like, okay, we have this funny line, and then, you know, someone says a funny line to Glockter, and then there's obviously a break, and then the next one picks up, and it's like, and now this, and I'm just, wait a second, and then it happens again, like, one little chapter or one sub-chapter ends with one line, and the next chapter begins with the same line again, and I was just thinking, okay, this is, it's cute, it's clever, but it's a bit too obvious. And then there's another thing that happens, which, again, it felt a bit too obvious, like, halfway through, almost exactly halfway through the book, it's like Joe Abercrombie goes, we've got to get the tension up a bit, because otherwise people are just kind of hanging around in the north, and people are just hanging around in the south, and then people are just kind of going further and further west all the time. And it's unclear if all of these things actually happen in at the same time chronologically, or if it's just the way the book is written. But suddenly there's a battle in the west, and there's a battle in the north, and there's a battle in the south all together. Like, it all kind of comes together, and these battles or these fights are told concurrently, even if one battle lasts a long time in the south and the battle in the north lasts less time, and the battle in the west is kind of just a very quick skirmish, they all kind of give an equal weight. And I thought, again, it's just a little bit too obvious when you go, oh, and now all of the characters are going to fight, and they're all going to fight at the same time, and they're all going to have, you know, be in among it, and I'm going to end one chapter on a cliffhanger and skip across to the next one and start that fight, and then end that one in a cliffhanger and then skip across the other one and start a fight, and you're never quite sure who lives or dies, because I'm going to end on cliffhangers when someone's unconscious, either dead or alive and stuff. And it did feel a little bit too, a tiny bit clunky at that point, even though it worked. You know, when I was left on that cliffhanger, I was like, oh, I really do want to get back and see what happens to this character. But it felt a bit too forced, in the same way that chapter 13, the clever writing idea that he had, is like, that's a good idea that you could do to make that scene more interesting, to write it while you're writing. But when it comes to the editing section, it's probably best to let the drama of the situation, you know, come through like it did in the battle sequences, rather than kind of relying on a kind of a quite cheap writing trick. Another bit of writing thing that I made a note, there's a scene from Jaws or Lethal Weapon, and if you know those two movies, you'll understand which scene those two have in common. It's the comparing scars. Well, I got this scar from doing this, and this scar from doing that, and this scar from doing this. And someone else goes, oh, well, I got this scar from doing this, and I got this scar, and this big scar on my face I got from doing this. And that same scene is here, and I'm like, I kind of know that from different movies. It works, though, because, you know, it's about the characters interacting. It's about, you know, getting to know people's backstories by sharing scars. Although it did feel, like I say, have seen it before in two other movies, or three other movies. I think I've seen it in other movies as well. But yeah, the comparing scars thing. Which brings me to the reading. I listened to this as an audiobook. Stephen Pacey is the audiobook narrator, and he is a very, very good narrator. I really enjoyed his voice. He's got a great performance. He does his accents. Well, not his accents. His accents are really good. He's very good at accents and can, you know, hit the accents almost perfectly every time. He's a British narrator, and he uses lots of regional British accents for the different characters, which is great because some of the characters would otherwise be quite tricky to keep straight, but even then I could just pick them up. And even listening back or remembering back to listening to the first audiobook, when the voices came back, I was like, yep, that's Giselle, yep, that's Glockta, that's Severard, that's Frost. You know, these voices were recognizable even from listening to the book years ago. The only thing that I was a little bit confused about right at the very beginning is that you have Northmen. And the Northmen, some of the Northmen talk in like West Country and Cockney accents, which is in the south of England. And then you've got this guy, I can't remember his name, but he's one of these main guys from down in the Union. And the Union is in the south of the Northmen, but this Union guy speaks with a Scottish accent. And I was like, ah, okay. So the Scottish guy, which is in the north of the UK, he is from the south, and then the Northmen are from the south of England. So it's not that the accents were bad. I just think it could have been just for me who know, like, I know these accents from the real world, and it would have been handy to have picked northern accents for Northmen and southern accents for, you know, or more upper class. I don't know. Little thing there. There was another big thing which is a combination of narrating and writing, and that is the word, I'm pretty sure I mentioned this in the previous review of this series, is the word grimace or grimace, as Stephen Pacey says it. Now, when I was listening to that, I was like, the previous book, the Blade itself, he said grimace, and I was like, I'm sure it's grimace. But since doing that review, I have heard it both ways. I've heard grimace, and I've heard grimace. And as research, when I was listening to this book, I thought, well, let me check it out. Which is correct? Is it grimace or grimace? And it turns out Google thinks it's pronounced like this.
Grimace.
Grimace, and dictionary.com thinks it's pronounced like this.
Grimace.
So grimace and grimace, we're split between Google and dictionary.com. So I'm not sure. However, I've always heard it as grimace. And for me, grimace is the way that it happened, you know, the way it should be said. Even if I'm wrong, maybe it's totally correct both ways. However, because it's a word which it kind of sticks in my brain every time it's said, I kind of noticed that word more. And holy shit, does Joe Abercrombie write the word grimace a lot in this book. It's this person, he...
Grimace.
And this person...
Grimace.
And he went here
grimace.
And...
Grimace.
And this person...
Grimace.
And all the time it's...
Grimace.
And it kind of caught me out. It's like, do people do anything else with their face? Except... Oh shit, I've lost the button. Missed the button.
Grimace.
So... Again, if this were just, he grimaced and did this grimace, if it was a word that I didn't recognize, or it didn't snag in my brain, I probably wouldn't realize how many
grimace.
Times it said. So what I decided to do, as I was listening to the end of this audiobook over the weekend, I had Firefox open and I had the...
Grimace.
Define grimace, or define grimace open in Google, and each time I heard the word...
Grimace.
I'd press the button which said...
Grimace.
And I tell you something, it drove Juliana crazy as well, because all the time, it was probably three times a chapter I would press
grimace.
And yeah, and Juliana would be like, what are you doing? It's just like, yay, he said that word again.
Grimace.
Yeah, so it does get, it did get a little bit, I don't know, like I say, I think I've explained it enough, that it's a combination of reading and writing.
Grimace.
And you'd think that someone would be able to think of different word than...
Grimace.
But then, I guess, that brings us to the theme of this book, or one of the themes, I like talking about the ideas and things behind it. I don't really have anything to say about this, except that it's pretty grim. And the characters, there aren't any black and white characters, except there are some really black characters. But there's some bad guys who eat flesh and are zombies. Not zombies, but, you know, whatever. And there's some bad guys in the north who need seeing to as well. But all of the heroes in this book, all of the main guys, except maybe Giselle, all have darkness and bad stuff going on with them as well. Even people like West, I'm thinking, yeah, West is a great character, but even then something pops up and he doesn't come through to the end of this book unscathed. The Dog Man certainly doesn't, none of the characters do. So I think that's the whole point of this book, is that, you know, Joe Abercrombie is trying to do something interesting against the kind of normal storytelling and characters who are meant to root for, because pretty much some of the worst characters in the book are the ones that I'm most interested in. I say worst, like some of the more morally repugnant, least morally whatever. I don't know. So, that's, I guess, what the book is about. Maybe, I don't really know. I've not really got anything to say about that. Anyway, finally, something new with storytelling as well. Yeah, it's just frustrating. This is my final note. I still don't know why Giselle is a main character. 2 books into 3 books, still not sure what he's doing in the book. And with that, I'm going to give it a rating. I gave the last book 2 stars. This is certainly a big step up because, like I say, stuff's happening. The characters are better written. I think it's a big step up. So I'm going to give this one 3 stars. However, I think what I'm going to do is read the next book or listen to the last audiobook in this trilogy, and then kind of give a summing up, probably a shorter episode again, because I, you know, trying to avoid some spoilers at least, even though I don't know what I'm spoiling by saying any of this, because I don't know what's important. And I'll finish off this series pretty quickly and give an update and see what I would do. Like, if you're meant to, like, I would recommend people read them in quick succession, so you're not waiting years to find out what's happening like I've been doing. Otherwise, I don't really know what to say. Yeah, 3 stars. Oh yeah, I'll give an overall rating to the full series. However, I'm a bit nervous about doing this because checking out here on the Wikipedia page, the first law, it says, let me just check here. No, can't find it. I saw something here before. Oh, here it is. Yeah. So it's the book or the whole trilogy. There's a trilogy plus 3 other standalone books. There's The Blade Itself, Before They Hanged, and Hanged, and The Last Argument of Kings, which are the trilogy. Then standalone books, Best Served Cold, set in the same universe as the first law. So then the Heroes, and then The Red Country. And I mean, I don't want to read the Wikipedia page about them because of spoilers, but I'm thinking, hopefully the story really does come to a close in The Last Argument of Kings, and it doesn't just say at the end, you thought this was going to be about this and about that, actually it's going to be about this, and you have to read those other 3 books to get it. Hopefully that won't happen, but I am a little bit nervous, considering what they were talking about in this book and and one of the book titles there. Anyway, that's it for this book. Hopefully you've enjoyed listening to this review, even if you've not read the book or any of these books. So, you can email me, luke@juggler.net. That's the best way to get in contact with me. I do reply to every email that I receive. If you've got a book that you want to read me to read, that you have written yourself, or that you are a publisher or a publicist for, don't send it to me. I will probably 99.9999% chance that I won't read it. However, if you've got a book to recommend to me that you didn't read and you think I should read, you can email it to me, luke@juggler.net, or you can send me a message on goodreads.com. This is your last chance to get over to goodreads.com and become my friend, and or just sign up for the SFBRP listener group, and you can have some input into the big episode 200 show, which Juliana and I will be recording over the next few days. And then get ready for the Culture series read-along, the Ian M. Banks tribute read-along that we're going through all of the 10 Culture novels, all 10 stories there, in order. Maybe not all one after the other with no breaks. I'll probably be getting to some other books in the meantime, but that's the big plan after this special episode 200. So thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.